Because nearly everyone these days feels they have a right to voice how they've been unjustly treated, the term victim no longer generates a whole lot of sympathy. This is Focus on the Family, and today we're going to look at a segment of our society that is hurting, but often their pain is overlooked or perhaps misread. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout, encouraging you to stay tuned because we may be talking about you or your family. Doctor?
Mike, in the early 1970s, a very, very bad idea came along called no-fault divorce, and the media jumped all over it, as it does with what it considers to be new ideas. And it created a steamroller effect that had the result of changing the laws in almost every state in the nation and in Canada as well. It became easier to get out of marriage than to get out of the contract for a refrigerator that you'd purchased,
that's right,
or almost any other business deal. And as a result, the incidence of divorce and divorce-related problems just went through the roof, and it hasn't come down yet.
And the true victims in those breakups, that epidemic of divorce, were the children who saw everything that was stable and secure in their lives begin to unravel.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, and that's the topic for today's broadcast as we talk about the subject of children of divorce.
And we have a guest, a very familiar guest, to help us do that.
We sure do, Mike. Let me introduce one of my favorite psychologists, Dr. Arch Hart, who has been a frequent guest on Focus on the Family. He has an earned Ph.D. from the University of Natal in South Africa, which explains why he talks funny. He's a former dean of the Fuller Graduate School of Psychology. He's the author of many books, The Hidden Link Between Adrenaline and Stress, which we discussed here on Focus on the Family. We've re-aired that program a time or two. Probably
yes.
We'll do it again. The Sexual Man, Healing Life's Secret Addictions. And today we're going to talk about helping children survive divorce. Welcome back to Focus
Thank
on the Family,
Thank you, Jim.
Arch.
It's wonderful to be back with you.
You had to fly out from California to be with us today, and I appreciate it.
It's wonderful to be here.
Your first visit to this ministry occurred in 1982.
Yes.
And you don't have any idea what we talked about that day, do you?
I don't. No, I must confess, I don't.
We talked about the cancer of resentment.
Oh, yes.
And that whole phenomenon of what cancer does, not to the person you resent, but to the resenter.
Yeah, it's the boomerang that comes back and hurts you.
It is. And there was a quote that you gave us that day that I've been using ever since, and it has such meaning. You said, "Forgiveness is giving up my right to hurt you for hurting me."
That's right.
And that's
You've got a good memory.
That's good stuff. And it's very relevant to what we're going to talk about today, because divorce oozes with resentment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Resentment. And even divorces that begin out as friendly divorces, about one-third of them turn nasty. And the level of resentment, conflict, just escalates.
There's always a ripping and tearing
There's
of
always.
Flesh.
There's always.
And the children get caught up in
it. Yeah. The victims of divorce are the children, not the parents. They are the children.
The title of your book, again, is Helping Children Survive Divorce. The word survive is a strong word there.
It is a strong
word. Do you really mean that?
I mean that.
Is it a matter of survival?
It is a matter of survival. And you know, I write the book out of my own personal experience. In that my parents divorced when I was 12 years of age. Oh. And I know it firsthand, which is more than a lot of people can say.
How much do you remember about that?
Vividly, everything. I can remember vividly the day my mother walked into the room and said, "Pack your things, we're leaving."
Did you have any clue that it was coming?
No. I knew that the marriage was conflicted. For years they'd been fighting and arguing. I felt a relief when school holiday time came and I could go and be with my grandparents, who were wonderful Christian people. And for that period of time, there was peace in my life. And then we come back to the home, conflicted, tense, and so forth. But despite all of that, the last thing I wanted was for my parents to separate.
A lot of
divorce.
Tears at that time?
Cried a lot. Difficult at first. You hold it in, you know.
Yeah.
My father didn't respect boys who cried. So you get the message, you know, don't be a sissy.
Toughen
up a little bit. This is life. And so you internalize those tears. I think there's a lot of internal crying. Not all of us cry outwardly. We cry inwardly.
Did you blame one of the parents over the other?
You know, and I write about this in the book, because I think parents need to understand that what often happens is that children turn and blame the innocent parent. Mm-hmm. So I turned to my mother and took my anger out on her.
But it was really your father?
It was my father. Of course it was my father. I knew that, but... Part of it is, I think, the child's fear. You turn to the safest parent to project your anger, to take out your feelings. And I turned on her, and I blamed... I didn't blame her. I took my anger out on her.
Now, going back to that word survival,
yes.
Was it a matter of survival for you? What happened?
I did not survive very well, which is why I eventually got to writing this book, because... First, no child is the same after divorce as they would have been if no divorce had occurred. There's a lot you can do to make things better than they would otherwise be, but it is a matter of surviving. And I certainly don't want to send the message that, well, if your parents divorce, you are doomed. That's not my message. My message is that if divorce is inevitable and it's going to happen anyway, then there is a lot you can do to help your children survive and minimize the damage.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how to make it easier. It's never going to be easy.
No.
It's like any other, again, the analogy to a disease process. It's never easy to have measles or mumps or cancer or any other disease, but there are things that are done to help under those circumstances. Mm. Let's talk about what will help. Begin with... How in the world you tell a child, let's say five or older, that this has occurred? Did your folks handle it wisely with you?
No. They did not tell me what was going on behind the scenes. They thought they were protecting me. And I think this is the biggest mistake parents can make, to think that you're protecting your children by not telling them what's going on. I have come to the conclusion that the best thing parents can do is be honest with their children. I think we are created in a way where we deal with reality better than we do with imagined, with our imagination. And so lying awake at night as a young child, playing out in my mind different scenarios, that is anxiety producing. It's not fear producing, it's anxiety producing. And anxiety is bad. Mm-hmm. There's nothing good about anxiety. Well, I would rather have been fearful knowing what was happening than to have to put up with the anxiety.
Now, let's go back to that word resentment again. How does a parent who resents the husband or wife, the spouse, convey to a child what has happened without spilling all of that poison on the child?
And that's the problem. You get to express your resentment toward the partner at the child. The partner may already have gone, split, run off. And you're left there, and the only person you can express that to is your child. And so, therefore, you need to not take it out on the child.
Furthermore, there's a temptation, is there not, to pull that child to you by saying how bad
the
other
parent is. To alienate the child from the other parent. And bear in mind that a high percentage of divorces are not mutual consenting, let's go our separate way. That is not how divorce occurs in the majority of cases. Most of the cases, one of the parent ups and leaves. Yeah. Either they're an affair, either some other attraction or disillusionment, but it is seldom a mutually agreed upon, all right, the best thing we can do is separate. That's a rare occurrence.
You don't recommend that parents go into that.
I know I am not recommending that. Yeah. I'm saying that invariably it's one partner being left hurt, rejected, discarded, and resentful toward the other. And
okay.
So all you can do then is take it out on your child.
All right, let's get a highly specific situation, because we're talking to people who are there.
Right.
Let's suppose that the husband has run off with another woman, and the wife and the mother is left to explain this to the child. I talked to somebody just the other day where... this man had been the pillar of the church. He was deeply committed to the Lord. He loved his family, gave time to his family, and went a little crazy. We've all seen that. He just got infatuated with this woman, and now he won't have anything to do with his own children. He treats his who is now his ex-wife, like dirt. How does that woman deal with this with the children? Daddy never comes around. Now, he doesn't show any kind of love to them anymore, and he's gone. How does she deal with that?
You have to be honest. Don't make excuses for the other partner. It's just a matter of saying, darling, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but your daddy has left us.
Doesn't want to live.
Doesn't want to live with us. Now, I don't want you, and I think this is the hard part, to say to your child, I don't want you to hold this against your daddy or your mommy. I don't want this to come between the two of you, and I'm going to do everything I can to get healing for the hurt I'm experiencing.
We need to pray for daddy.
And we need to pray for daddy. We need to... You've got to do the Christian thing, Jim. That's what you've got to do. There is no other way.
Well, that's tough.
It is tough.
When you're dying inside
and
yourself.
Maybe the best thing you can do at that point is just state the facts and then pull back and go and get some help for yourself.
Yeah.
Because the one factor above all other factors that minimizes the damage that divorce has on children is when the parents get healing for themselves. Heal your own resentment. Heal the conflict between the two of you, and you give your gift, your child, the gift of healing.
It's very difficult to provide first aid for a child when you're bleeding yourself.
That's right. And not just bleeding, but when your bleeding is hurting the child.
Yes.
Because now, when a young child sees how mommy is devastated, or daddy, let's remember, this is not only...
It goes both ways.
But when a little child is looking at the parent who has been abandoned and sees that hurt, that child will often feel to blame for that. I was the one who caused that.
That often occurs, doesn't it?
Oh, it is very common.
You've got to head that off. How do you do it?
Jim, I can tell you, it was the first thought in my mind, I am to blame. Something I did. I've not been the good child I should be. And you
really remember thinking those thoughts.
Absolutely.
And nobody helped you.
And I would lie awake at night trying to think, what did I do? And, of course, you can't come up with anything. But it's there. You think, well, maybe I'm to blame for this.
People have to understand that is the self-centeredness of childhood. I heard a story the other day of a child who was, I think, 3 years of age, was sitting on the toilet when an earthquake hit in Southern California, and this kid looked at his mother and said, "What did I do, Mommy?" You know, you naturally think everything's your fault and your responsibility, and especially when a family breaks up, that goes right straight to the core of the child, doesn't it?
The second major thing that I think a parent must keep in mind, the parent who's left now with the children and having to deal with this abandonment and so forth, it's never planned, you see. I mean, these things are spontaneous, usually. But the second most important thing to realize that this is such the departure of the other parent is so dramatic for the child. Change as little else as you possibly can. The first reaction of the rejected spouse is this: I'm packing up, we're moving, we're going back to grandma's, we're going back east, we're going back Timbuktu, whatever.
That rips loose.
And
all the friends... Everything familiar, the neighborhood, the bed, the clock, everything changes,
right? This child needs to adjust to this one very significant departure, which is a loss for that child. Minimize other change. Cool it, you know. Why do they do that? Well, I'm going to take the child so that you want to have access to the child, or I'm going to punish you, and that is the worst thing you can do. Change as little as you possibly can.
Sometimes that's done for financial reasons, isn't it? I'm going back and live with my folks. I can't afford to live
with them.
But
it doesn't have to be done tomorrow. It's the urgency. It's the suddenness with it. Prepare the way. Sit down and do some planning now. The impulsive, sudden decisions will always be wrong. And the child will suffer because of that.
Now, let's talk about the various emotions that show up in children at this time. How do you recognize and deal with anger in the child? The one who is obviously really holding somebody responsible for this, maybe the wrong parent. How do you ventilate that anger? Mm-hmm. There are those in our profession who will say that you allow that child to say, "I hate you," and throw things and scream and throw temper tantrums and so on. That's not the answer.
I do not believe in that at all. I am very clear on this point as a psychologist. Anger is to be talked about, not acted out.
Yeah.
the biggest mistake parents can make. And often they feel guilty, you see. The poor child, look how the child's suffering. All right, so I'm going to let him bash, you know, break the television set, kick the dog, because most people have picked up on that secular idea that anger should be ventilated, acted out.
It actually creates more anger. The crazy thing is it doesn't ventilate.
It reverses the anger. What you're doing is teaching the child how to act angrily. Yeah. There is no research evidence whatsoever, and there's been some very excellent work done by a psychologist from Boston in this area, that shows that ventilating or rehearsing anger relieves the anger. It only creates more.
So you sit down and talk.
You've got to sit down and talk. A child, no matter how young, needs to talk. Maybe a very young child may need to draw some pictures for you. How do you feel about Daddy and Mommy? Draw a picture of me and Daddy. Get the child to express the feelings. Parents don't like doing that. They don't like doing that because it only stirs up their own hurt. It only stirs up their own hurt.
All right, let's role play a little bit. I'm 6 years old. And you're my dad, and our mom is gone, your wife is gone, and you're seeing these signs of anger in me. And I'm saying to you, Daddy, I'm mad at my mother. She doesn't call me. She doesn't come see me anymore. I think I hate my mother.
Yes, unfortunately, he doesn't even say that. What he says is, oh, my tummy hurts.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to school today.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. I mean, what are you feeling? To the six-year-old, you might have to say, tell me how you're feeling. How do you feel about me or your daddy right now? And sometimes you even have to suggest a vocabulary. Yeah. They don't have the labels for these feelings yet. Yeah. And so you feel angry. You feel like you want to break things. Mm-hmm. And then the child gets in touch with the emotion. And while it might feel like it's more painful at that moment, in the long run, and this is the important point to emphasize, it's long-term benefits that you're looking for here, not the short-term. Mm-hmm. And sometimes short-term intensified pain is the best solution for the long-term relief.
All right, bring the Lord into that conversation now. How do you help that child learn to lean on the Lord and depend on Him in a moment?
Well,
like
and
that.
Because many, many children have prayed, you know, they've been praying for the conflict. I prayed. I lay at night and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed and prayed. And then when finally they split, where's God? And so there's a crisis of faith, even as a six-year-old, a crisis of faith. And the parent has to model for the child not just faith that everything will come right, but faith to believe that we can get through this, that we can get over our hurt, that the pain will get better one day. We're going to hurt now, and we're going to get worse before it gets better. But, you know, God is with us. Yeah? By our teaching and by our actions and by our attitude and by our own display of spiritual behavior, even a four-year-old, three-year-old child can benefit from that.
One of the surprising things in your book that I know is valid from other research is that when a child becomes super sweet and super cooperative and becomes a little angel, beware, that's not a good sign.
People
have a hard time understanding but it's true.
That's right. We call it reaction formation. And often little Mary, five-year-old Mary, will suddenly become the sweetest, kindest child, will wait on you, will try to anticipate your needs. It's a danger signal.
She's taking on the responsibility to cheer you up, to help mom out. And that's too much to put on a kid.
It's too much to put on a little child. That little child should not be doing that. And trying to relieve your pain. But the child will pay for that because they take upon themselves your pain. And they shouldn't have to bear such a burden.
Mm. At what point, Arch, do you seek professional help for a child?
That's a difficult question, really, because if you seek professional help too soon, you may send the message to the child, something wrong with you.
Yeah.
I think one should always get help for oneself first. Because I'm a strong believer that a good, healthy parent is the best therapist a child can have.
You know what that reminds me of? On the when you fly on an airplane and they describe emergency procedures and they say the oxygen falls, they always tell you put your own mask on
first
before you put the mask on
exactly.
a child. Take care of yourself.
It seems selfish, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's not selfish. The point is that you take care of yourself first, and you then are in the best position to help your child. Now, if having got help for yourself, and you know, there's a tremendous amount of help available in the church today. I mean, as you know, the
divorce recovery classes,
all sorts of classes. Yeah. Most churches are sensitive to these issues, and if your church doesn't have such a program, go kick up a fuss. Talk to the pastor. You know, it's time they
pastors
did.
Across the country are cheering you at this moment, suggesting they got enough people kicking up a fuss. But I understand.
You know,
the larger churches almost
have it. Okay. And if your church doesn't have, mobilize a resource from another church. I mean, let's help each other in this regard. But there comes a time when a child is acting out so severely, harming itself, or particularly, and I think this is what I would like to underscore today, that when there are signs of depression in the child, you should seek professional help.
All right, we've got 2 or 3 minutes left. Tell us what those signs are.
The child, you see, the children don't show depression the same way as adults. What happens is that often they start to somaticize. So it's the
hurting
tummy, or usually the stomach, headache, pain generally. They withdraw. They want to be by themselves. They don't want to be with their friends. They socially withdraw, become isolated. Often anger is a mask for depression. They want to beat you, and the child comes up and fists.
Cruelty to animals is a
and,
sure
and then they take
tip
it
off.
Very, yeah. Absolutely. They are cruel to an innocent animal. And there's a sadness, so they tend to cry a lot. And these are the signs of depression. And we now believe that later depression proneness has its origin in these painful episodes of early childhood. And divorce, more than any other life experience, can set you up for serious problems of depression later in life.
What does the counselor or psychologist do when that 8-year-old comes in? What goes on there?
Mostly it is a grief counseling. That it's reactive depression.
Talk through
the loss. Confront the loss. Symbolize the loss. And so one draws pictures a lot. One talks emotional feelings a lot. It's a process. You try to disabuse the child of fantasizing that it'll all come right again. Mommy and Daddy will get back together again. It's wonderful when it does happen, and those miracles do happen and happen often. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it helps a child to hold out hopes that will happen. It just perpetuates the depression.
You know, one of my favorite comedians through the years, he's getting older now, but Jonathan Winters has a unique approach to humor. I don't think there's ever been anybody quite like him. And I heard him say one time, in a moment of real honesty, he was not trying to be funny. He said that when he was a child, his mother and father got a divorce, and he talked about how painful it was for him, that it just wounded him so deeply. And it was not common in those days. And he said that he put on a big front and he fought with the other kids and they never knew. But he said, when nobody was looking, I went out behind a tree somewhere and cried. And he said, all my humor is a response to sorrow.
That's right. And I think that goes beyond him. I think most good comedians will say, there's a deep melancholy from which my mirth.
Arch, we're just getting started.
Let's proceed.
Tomorrow we're talking about Dr. Archibald Hart's book, Helping Children Survive Divorce, What to Expect, How to Help. And there are an awful lot of parents out there that need this book and need this information. And we're going to provide a little more of it next time. Thanks for being our guest. We'll pick up right here next time around.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jim.
It's always good to have Dr. Archibald Hart in the studio with us, and I hope you can be back when we continue this conversation on the next edition of Focus on the Family. Our producer has been Kelly Crowther. Engineering and production were handled by Pete Stokey and Jim Adam. Our executive producer is Bobby Valentine. Our host has been psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.